Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by RockAuto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
And this is MotorWeek podcast number 56. Thanks for joining us, joining me and you here on our Studio C around our table. Is over-the-edge reporter Stephen Chupnik.
Hey, hey.
And our associate producer and in charge of all of our road tests, Ben Davis.
Good to be here.
And we're going to take a look at the latest member of the Prius family, or what they call the Prii clan now, and also a supercar that was built for extreme speed that we never seem to get enough of. Let's start off with the Prius V. V for versatility. This is the new member of the Prius clan. Toyota went online and let customers pick what they wanted to call multiple Priuses, whether it's Priuses or what, and they chose Prii. So this is the second member of the Prii family. It's a little bit longer, a little bit taller than the current five-door liftback. Some call it a wagon. Some call it a crossover. And I think it's kind of an interesting vehicle, and I'll turn it over to our two panelists here to say, what do you think of what you know so far about the Prius V? Is it going to be a success? Is it really needed? Or is it just a way of kind of capitalizing on the name?
I think it's a genius move, whether it's needed or not, because now you have a bigger Prius. People are going to be thinking to themselves, non-Prius owners are going to be thinking, man, it's really time to check out Prius. Why don't I have one? Before, I would just tell myself they were too small. Now, there's no reason not to check it out.
It's 6 inches longer, and it has about 15% more interior room, but all that extra space goes in the back seat and in the cargo area. The cargo carries about 50% more cargo than the current car.
Yeah, I kind of like it, and I'm not a Prius fan. I'm not a hybrid fan, but the look... I kind of like the slope in there.
It still looks sort of like a Prius, but what is it? Do you like more muscular or something?
I think it was just big. I think, like Ben said,
substantial?
It looked like there was actually a car, rather than when you look at the Prius,
still has a toy factor to it.
It's still almost a toy factor. It just doesn't look like it can really do the damage. Obviously... Mm. It does. I mean, it wouldn't be selling like it was.
Put your point on it. I mean, V is supposed to stand for versatility. It's a car that you could probably say it could now be your only car.
Sure.
Any other things about it that strike you as interesting? I know one that I like is they didn't just make the cargo bed larger. They took the back seat and made it kind of Honda-fied the back seat. It slides. It reclines, so you can expand that cargo area with the seat backs down, which basically also have a hard surface on them for loading, to about over 60 cubic feet of space, which is about what most compact crossovers have. So they've made it – I think they've done a good job of making the V stand for something. It has the same powertrain.
Same – are the fuel capacities and battery capacities the same?
Basically, it is. They've done a little bit smaller battery. It'll still go about a mile on pure electric charge. The powertrain, the engine basically is the same. The big thing, though, is they've added, of course, size and weight, and that, of course, affects fuel economy. So everybody wants to know, well, what will it do? Well, it has a combined city highway of 42. And that compares to 50 for the liftback. So you're getting more room, more versatility, but you are giving up some fuel economy. However, that still beats everything in the crossover class.
And I think that's what people want to know is the fuel economy when you do get a bigger car. That's what our Facebook fans wanted to know. They actually weren't too many were fans of the look of it, which was surprising. They thought
really because that's really what the appeal has been.
Yeah, a lot of people thought that one of Catherine said it was an ugly design for a car by Toyota. So which is I kind of liked it, but and a few people did like it. They thought it was a fishbowl design. A few people.
Well, it's definitely a Prius now. The Prius C, which will follow it, will be a smaller car, and
that actually looks almost completely unlike a Prius.
I think it reminds me a little bit of a Fit, Honda Fit.
Definitely.
Anything you want to add, Ben?
Just anxious to see what the next Prius is going to be.
Well, I think that that they are on a roll, and I think this one will greatly expand the marketplace for the Prius. And I'm looking forward to spending some more time at it myself. I think if I was going to buy one, it appeals to me because you can do a lot more with it. Mm-hmm. It has a lot more space. Okay, let's move on to the other side of the car equation, and that is the 2012 Nissan GT-R, the new iteration of Nissan's supercar. And Ben, what's changed?
Well, we got more horsepower this time around. In fact, we're up 45 horsepower to 530 now. More pound-feet of torque go along with that, 488 up from 434. The most noticeable thing is going to be your LED markers down low that are pretty much daytime running lights. A revised boost control and a freer flowing intake exhaust are, and larger brakes as well.
Now, in your testing, did you find that it was faster? I mean, did it, you know, so far we've, you know, it's like it's the car's been tweaked, but does it really drive any differently?
I thought it was – I was really – I mean, we got similar numbers, unfortunately,
to last time,
to our 09 test. So I don't want to believe it's all hype. Maybe it was track conditions. It was kind of hot that day. There was an obsessive amount of traction compound on the track. I don't know if that kind of had a stuck mouse trap effect off the line.
Could have.
But the launch control, I did it. It was great. I took it up to 4,000, just let off the brake. And for a split second, nothing happened. I thought I didn't do it right. So I started looking around, and then it just hits, and you're not ready for it. And down the track, I hurdle, and it felt like cutting the grass as a kid on a lawn tractor, and you push the clutch in and fly down a hill, and you get that feeling that this
thing really
shouldn't be going this fast, but it is.
Control.
So there's nothing I can do except ride it out.
3.5 seconds, 0 to 60 is nothing to sneeze at in
any
car.
That's tremendous. I mean, it was an 11.9 quarter.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. Now, let me set up something. Did you get a chance to drive it?
Unfortunately, it was here so short, I saw it.
Yeah, it basically came, we saw, we went. But here's an issue that seems to have divided the staff. I like the fact that it feels like a mechanical machine. This is not a quiet car. It makes noise. The gear shift makes noise. You hear the rear end clunk. It has a lot of the mechanical sounds of an older Corvette. You feel like you're in a piece of specialized machinery, where so many performance cars that we get today, they have all of this character out of them because people want things more refined, quieter, you know, more silky smooth behavior. This is no Porsche. It's no BMW. It feels actually more American than that, having a lot of those clunks and wheezes and so forth. I really liked it. I thought this was a fun car to drive that rewarded me with my all of my senses. But that was not a universal feeling on the staff. Some of the members of the staff that got to drive it thought it was too clunky, and they don't remember the 09 car being that clunky.
It was weird going through the slalom, too. The steering became incredibly heavy with not a whole lot of input from the road, just a overly heavy feeling. It was, and there was not a whole lot of lateral support, but, of course, I was jumping out of the Cayman R with the big race seat, so that could have had something to do with it.
But I think that's also an interesting thing. You were jumping out of a very, very refined high-performance car into a piece of machinery that 3 years ago or 2 years ago, we couldn't get enough of.
So I got the direct comparison.
Which one did you like better?
I was the Cayman R guy.
I have a feeling that's going to be – I think when we first saw the GTR, we were all quite taken with it.
It's like seeing a unicorn. You just don't see one.
You don't see one. But now this car seems to say like, well, okay – but it doesn't do the same for you.
And that was the thing. You see it, and that's exactly what – yeah, I went out the first day it came in, snapped a picture, put it on Facebook, and immediately had a response of, you know, oh, my God. You know, the fan I guess, respect for this car.
The hype's been pretty substantial.
But just even from 09, or I mean, just this car just has that aura about it.
Well, the Skyline, the Nissan Skyline, the Japanese model, has been the iconic performance car for Nissan for a long, long time. So it's never come here before. It's finally here now.
And that gives it that special allure. If you were driving a Skyline and you had imported it here, that's saying something.
Right.
But now the GTR has been here for a few years, and it's still great to see because you don't see it that often. But it just doesn't have that – it still has a lot of pride of ownership, believe me. But it just – it doesn't have that
– Boy, do we sound jaded or what?
This doesn't make sense because it does have a tremendous sense of cool, but it just doesn't have that imported – you'll probably never see one of these again, right-hand drive sense of cool.
I still love it. All the clunks and all.
I'd take it.
Yeah, me too. In a heartbeat. Okay, let's move on to our next order of business. And Stephen, back to you for a couple of more gear items. What do you got? That looks suspiciously like a key fob.
What is that? Well, you're a secret agent.
You actually could be a secret agent. Swan Security has been known for probably the best building security over the last 5 years, just the technology that they have in their building. They have a remote camera that you stick on your keychain, and it really does look like
it's a key fob.
A key fob, your regular open, close, right, you know, car door, and it's a remote camera. It's 720.
Oh my gosh, it's high def.
It's 720. It's high def quality, but it doesn't look that way. It's not
right.
broadcast.
Right.
You can't.
Right.
It's definitely better.
What would you use it for? I mean, it really looks like just a little key fob with a little hole on the end.
Well, when I got it, that's exactly what I said to myself. The only thing that we could think of is that security when you're, you know, for females or males, you know, who are walking to a parking lot,
they're late
night.
Somebody approaches them.
You know, before you walk out of your out of your office or wherever you're going, just hit play or
record.
How
much will it record?
It records about I'd say 30 minutes.
We found
about 30 minutes. Not, you know, in a full, it's got a mini micro SD card.
I was going to say, do you take the card out or is it plugged directly into a computer?
No, it plugs USB, plugs right into the computer.
Isn't that cool?
You know what would be cool for? To turn on before you give to your valet and see what actually goes on.
See what actually happens. Oh, that's good, Ben. And see what actually happens to your car.
Yeah.
What else you got for us?
Well, what I found, I have a Caravan that has an aux plug, does not have a USB port.
Uh-huh.
And I've been looking around for an aux plug that really does work, and Extreme Mac has made some stuff.
So this is an iPod.
It's an iPod, iPhone, and iPad charger.
That you can plug into the auxiliary input.
Input, right. And USB input through.
And USB input.
And USB input. Okay. There's two different products. But the aux plug, I think, is really kind of neat because of – you don't see that, and you don't get the you know that very
well,
often.
A lot of the older cars, 2 or 3 years old,
right,
basically
only
just have an auxiliary input.
That thing's incredible. Where it has an aux plug on the end of the power output,
the power
thing,
output.
And then you can plug your iPod through that aux jack, and it'll broadcast through your stereo.
Right. It has
it
has your regular Apple, and it does only work with Apple products. Mm-hmm. It's about each one is about $30.
And that's made by who? Extreme Mac.
It has your regular iPod adapter that goes right into your product, your device,
pretty cool.
And goes right into your
very
outlet.
Useful adapter cables.
Definitely.
Not everybody has an iPod input in the car. And
definitely.
Frankly, you know, a lot of cars, you have to get the up-level trim to get that.
You do.
Okay, that brings us to our Motor Week lightning round, where our panelists have the opportunity to share their opinions on topics, and hopefully we'll get a little steam going here. 2 minutes until, and when we hear the bell from Michelle Parker, our producer, that means time is up. Okay. General Motors CEO Dan Akerson recently suggested at their right after their first annual meeting since the company went public that the federal government should raise gas taxes up to $1 a gallon to spur sales of fuel-efficient cars. Now, this issue has been raised by car companies and environmentalists for years. Do you think it's a good idea or a very bad one? And have at it.
I, I put this on Facebook.
Oh, when, I can imagine it, what that response was.
And the response was just overwhelming. I think I agree. I think it's ridiculous.
Why? Why, though? I mean, besides the fact it would just cost people more money.
Well,
the motive is supposedly
to get
a good
fuel
one,
efficient.
You know, make sure. I mean, the car companies, GM and others, are worried that they're going to spend all this money to make fuel efficient cars, which they have done before, and nobody wants them. You know, because they have to do it. It's mandated by law.
Right.
But the government cannot force you to buy a car. So they're worried about that. And if prices of gas fall, we all know what happens with small cars. So they're trying to put some stability to the market. But having said that, you still think it's a bad idea?
I really do. I think gas prices, at least now, are high enough. And people are going to buy fuel-efficient cars, whether it's the market, whether it's not the market, it's going there anyway. 2015, 16, you know, you have to, people have to, or the companies have to make fuel-efficient
cars. Well,
there is
evidence that people are basically turning to more fuel-efficient vehicles even without this prodding. Benny, any comment?
I think the economy would crumble. Vacation industries would just be destroyed. And
I think that's a very good point.
We are
a nation on wheels. We are not Europe.
Yeah.
We do not take trains everywhere. We drive.
This would destroy the resale value of vehicles that didn't get good fuel economy. People would just be bailing out of them. Nobody would be buying them. I think the cash for clunkers was a much better solution for this
problem.
I
honestly don't think we have to worry about any politician in his or her right mind going in and proposing any kind of big fuel tax, although the states are probably going to do it, at least, you know, 10, 20 cents to raise them in some money. But that seems to be very much state dependent.
Right. But I think this whole thing was based on to buy fuel efficient cars.
Well, it's an argument the automakers have made for a long time.
Right, right.
But I think it's fallen on deaf ears. It, once again, this is probably the biggest play it'll get is on discussions like this.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on now to our Motorweek mailbag. Oh, my. This one comes up time and time again. All right. This one comes from Michael. I'm an old auto mechanic, and I was wondering when the designation for the amount of torque produced by an engine changed from foot-pounds of torque to pound-feet of torque. Okay. I can give you an answer, but I'm going to keep my mouth shut for a minute. Anybody got anything they want to say?
I was hoping you were just going to give it.
I'm going to give it. It hasn't changed. Both are correct. It is not an equation. Foot-pounds and pound-feet are the same. Some people use foot-pounds. The British typically will use foot-pounds. In this country, Motorweek and a lot of other journalists use pound-feet. And it is the Society of Automotive Engineers, and their documentation usually uses pound feet. So they're both absolutely the same, and it's sort of they're completely interchangeable. And even on our program, they seem to crop up. Each of them crops up from time to time, although pound feet is what we try and stick to. Hmm. Any comments?
Well, I actually didn't know, but grammatically it actually sounds better to say foot pounds of torque.
Yeah. Foot pounds is traditionally what the British auto industry has used, but for reasons I do not know, most of the literature in this country that comes out of automotive engineering. Is pound feet, but it really makes absolutely no difference.
I think I'm going to reverse everything from now on. I'm going to go get a burger cheese after this.
Burger cheese. And that brings to a close our Motorweek podcast number 56. Be you a foot pound or a pound foot fanatic. Thank you very much for joining us today. And that goes also for our Over the Edge producer, Stephen Chupnik, and our associate producer, Ben Bavis.
See you next time.
And back in the little booth is our audio engineer, Jim Bigwood, who's made sure we come through loud and clear. Thanks to our podcast creator, Bob Mixter. And over on the bell, our producer, Michelle Parker, who basically does all of the real hard work setting up these podcasts by figuring out the topics and marshaling us into the studio like a herd of cats. And we want to thank her for her dedication. And thank you very much for listening. Be sure to catch Motorweek on public television stations everywhere and also on Discovery's HD Theater. I'm John Davis. Join us soon for more Motorweek.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motorweek. Television's original automotive magazine. Motorweek is made possible by rockauto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at motorweek.org. And watch Motorweek, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.